The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following is a conversation between Craig Newmark, founder of Craigslist and Craig Newmark Philanthropies, and Denver Frederick, host of The Business of Giving on AM 970 The Answer in New York City.
If you have ever wondered what is up with Craig, the founder of Craigslist, we have the answer for you. He's turned his attention and energy to philanthropy, supporting organizations who are actively engaged in veterans issues, women in tech, voter protection, and journalism. And it's a pleasure to have with us the aforementioned Craig, Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist and Craig Newmark Philanthropies. Good evening, Craig, and welcome to the Business of Giving.
Hey, I'm glad to be here.
Why don't we begin by having you tell us about Craigslist, which you almost called San Francisco Events, and how it all got started.
Well, these days, Craigslist is pretty much a place where people can get some help putting food on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can get some help getting a table. And then you can get some help finding a roof under which to put the table.
That's a nice sequence.
Yeah. It started off early 95 sometime in San Francisco. People had helped me settle into the town. I decided it was time to reciprocate. Mostly events to start off. And then people started asking for different categories of things, like apartments, on a list, and just grew incrementally and gradually from there. When I had to give it a name, I was going to call it San Francisco Events.
Mm-hmm.
People around me told me they already called it Craigslist. I had invented a brand. Then they told me what a brand is, and I agreed.
Yeah. So you really had no grand vision for this when you started. It really grew organically, almost by accident.
I don't think I'm a guy for grand visions. I have an idea what I'm doing, but I also know that plans often don't survive contact with reality.
Mm-hmm. When did you know that Craigslist was becoming a something, a brand, in fact?
Yeah. Around the end of 97, I saw that we were hitting about 1 million page views per month.
Mm.
And that's pretty good for that time. Microsoft wanted to pay me to run ads, and they wanted to pay me enough that I could live on that alone. But I decided that I'm a nerd. I don't need that much to live on. I was doing well as a programmer.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we should just run this thing with minimal monetization.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people might be surprised that you relinquished management control of Craigslist relatively early. Why was that the case?
Well, people helped me understand that as a manager, I kind of suck. And that I was fortunate in that because I've seen a lot of companies, particularly technology, where the founder gets what I call founder syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
They don't know when to give it to someone who can sustain it as a business. Fortunately, those friends reminding me of my suckage, they were right.
Mm-hmm. Well, you appear to be somewhat egoless in that regard because that's what really holds up a lot of people. And you really knew your limitations and were smart enough to step aside and turn it over to one of the best people you ever hired.
Well, I don't know if I'm egoless or anything like that. It's just that even though I'm capable of learning, sometimes learning from other people's mistakes. And that's worked out.
Mm-hmm. And you stay involved with the company, or you did, by becoming a customer rep?
Yeah, I had been coding, stopped doing that when Craigslist had a whole bunch
mm-hmm.
of technical people who were better than me. I went into customer service pretty intensely. But even several years ago, I realized Craigslist doesn't need me. I still do a little bit of customer service because that's the way anyone stays in touch with what's real. But my involvement is small, and that means I can do other things full time.
You know, I know you never had this in mind when you started, but looking back, how would you assess the impact that Craigslist had on newspapers, whose revenue model really had been largely dependent upon classified ads?
Well, I've looked at revenue and circulation figures over the last 60 years for newspapers. Straight line down, people tell me TV news.
Mm-hmm.
then that straight line goes abruptly farther south when the big .coms start getting involved. I'm sure Craigslist has had some effect, but it might not be more than a blip.
Yeah. Fair enough. So you have now become very focused on philanthropy. You've done that for a number of years, first with Craig's Connects, which I think was 2011, and you started Craig Newmark Philanthropies back in 2016. How did this interest in philanthropy and nonprofits crystallize for you?
Well, people doing good work in nonprofits have been talking to me maybe 15 years,
mm-hmm.
talking about community building.
Oh, I bet they have.
How online stuff works. I started giving advice. Craigslist started doing better. So I wound up trying to exert whatever influence I had on behalf of good efforts and then started trying to help out with cash.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of influence, were there any influences early in your life growing up that has informed your philanthropy, either the causes you support or how you go about doing it?
Early on, Mr. and Mrs. Levin at Sunday school helped me understand that I should treat people like I want to be treated.
Mm.
Charity was a theme there, but also knowing enough is enough. After you've made a certain amount of money, then maybe it's time to start giving it away. In high school, Mr. Shulsky, history teacher, U.S. history teacher.
Morristown High School?
Morristown
High. All
right,
I'm a Morristown guy.
Yeah. He helped us understand that a trustworthy press is the immune system of democracy, and he helped me better understand that America aspires to be about fairness, opportunity, and respect. And he was right. Those things affected me in a big way and continue to affect me. And Leonard Cohen has returned me to, let's say, my spiritual roots, I guess because of his work. He's reminded me of how much Mr. and Mrs. Levin affected me.
Well, speaking of Mr. and Mrs. Levin, what you just said a moment ago about enough is enough, is that one of the reasons you never took Craigslist public?
Taking Craigslist public would not serve our community.
Yeah.
And I figured doing well by doing good would prove to be a satisfactory business model. It's proven to be far more than satisfactory,
sure has.
Which is why I can give stuff away.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the causes that you focused on has been support of veterans, especially women who have served. How did that get started with you, and what organizations have been the beneficiaries of some of your support?
Well, about 10 years ago, I was at a lunch thing, sitting next to a volunteer for the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I haven't talked with them for hours because we had a meeting this morning. But the deal is that suddenly I realized back in Vietnam, vets were coming back, being treated really badly. That wasn't right.
Yeah.
So that as a cause clicked in my head. In a way, let's say that opera may not have clicked in my
yeah,
head.
Me too.
And I got involved with IAVA. That made a lot of sense to me,
mm-hmm.
like we're trying to protect the GI Bill. I got involved with the Bob Woodruff Foundation.
Great organization, too.
Yeah, they fund organizations which help wounded warriors and their families.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm involved with Vets in Tech, mm-hmm. for example. One theme there is getting vets and their spouses good jobs in technology. A big theme there, which I'm exploring now, is how do you get vets jobs in cybersecurity? Because there's a huge need for people with that background.
Mm-hmm.
In New York, I'm supporting the New York Veterans Alliance, run by Kristen Rouse,
yeah.
and working with the Mayor's Department of Veteran Services. The deal is to help and to keep helping because Americans we're kind of forgetting how much we owe vets, and we never as a people understood how much we owe the families of veterans.
Yeah, and although you've been living in San Francisco for 20-some-odd years now, a lot of your initiatives and efforts are really based here in New York City, correct?
Yeah, it seems that for the areas I'm interested in, New York is the center of gravity.
Yeah.
Things do go on relative to veterans and others in San Francisco, like Swords to Plowshares.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of other work of my interest goes on in Boston and Washington. But New York is where most of it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of tech, you have also been a champion of women in tech. Who are some of those organizations that you have been supporting and been involved with?
Yeah. Well, I've been looking for organizations which actually get good stuff done and for real, not just talk by but action. Girls Who Code is one of the best examples of this.
Yeah.
Because they give they provide opportunity and real useful information to girls in high school who may have never had a break. I remember my high school experience. That's when girls who were valedictorian types and all that started going into other fields, even though they were really good at science and math. And that felt wrong. And since I'm a nerd and not properly socialized, I didn't know why that should be.
Yeah, and we had Reshma Sujani, who heads up Girls Who Code, on the show. And I was surprised to learn that there are actually fewer women in tech today than there were a decade ago.
Yeah, something is going on that maybe isn't right.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is to support women in journalism, technology, a bunch of fields, trying to get them more money for startup work. And also, in terms of role models, there's even small efforts like getting more women editors and writers into mm-hmm. Wikipedia, and in Wikipedia, getting biographies of more women scientists and so on. Those things matter, both yeah. in the short and long run. And that's a big theme. Try to make things better in the short run while investing in the long run.
That sounds good to me. I also know that you're very passionate about voter protection in a nonpartisan way. Who's doing a good job in that space?
Well, that starts with Mr. Schulsky
mm-hmm, right.
reminding me that America aspires to be about fairness, opportunity, and respect, and that in the Declaration and Constitution, all people are equal under law. That's the start. Now I work with the Brennan Center for Law,
yeah.
Part of NYU. I work with Voto Latino, Demos. I work with Ford Foundation, the Sandler Foundation, and others, all trying to figure out how to protect the rights of Americans to vote, particularly when there are bad actors, some foreign, some domestic,
mm-hmm.
interfering with people's right to vote. That's really serious. We've got to defend the country against people interfering with our fundamental American processes.
Right. You know, you don't simply financially support these organizations, Craig. You're really actively involved and serve on a number of boards, a couple we've just mentioned, Girls Who Code, Iraq and Afghanistan, Veterans of America, but a lot of others, Center for Public Integrity. From what you've observed, what makes for a great board of a nonprofit organization?
Well, there are the usual things, like you need people who can monitor finances closely.
Yeah.
I'm not that guy. and what's missing usually is attention to media, communications, even PR.
Mm-hmm.
Until about 5 years ago, I had the stereotypical engineer's disdain for communications and PR. In some areas, I realized how badly I screwed up, and I started becoming a zealot, started getting a lot of media training, even more media training. And now I rely on a group called Weber Shanwick to figure out how I can be more effective on behalf of the groups that I support.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a really big force multiplier. And I'm finding that nonprofits who are really good at doing something often are really terrible about talking about it. And unless people are talking about what you do, you kind of don't exist. What's worse is that a lot of nonprofits who are good at talking about what they're doing, a lot of the time they're running scams.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you really can't have impact, real impact or scale, if you're not getting the word out about the good work that you're doing. You're just going to stay pretty much where you were. Then, of course, there is journalism, and we touched on your recent gift of $20 million to Sydney University of New York, CUNY's Graduate School of Journalism. But you've been involved in this space for quite a while. What is at the heart of your concern around the state of journalism today?
Well, there's that Mr. Schulsky thing.
Mm-hmm.
A trustworthy press is the immune system of democracy. And one might argue the immune system failed a couple of years ago. There were problems, let's say, of false equivalency, of, mistruths, getting unchallenged, that kind of thing. So I figure I can help the people in journalism who want to, let's say, restore journalism in newspapers to a position where they would challenge mistruths. They would report accurately. They would report fairly and honestly. And that's another way where we defend the country.
Mm-hmm.
Is in a democracy can't survive without news that's trustworthy. And I figured I could play my part by supporting the people who are the professionals.
Let me get your take on this. And I always worry about the danger of romanticizing an earlier age because I know how fallible my memory can be. But I don't remember news outlets as being as partisan and biased as they are today. And I say that for both the left and the right. It seems that the current business model demands that you pick a team. They pick a team and then become cheerleaders to the fans who support that team. Do you see it that way or do you see it differently?
I do see a lot of the press being partisan, often fairly, often very unfairly. I figure I'm going to focus on the positive on how to make things better.
Good.
By encouraging trustworthy reporting.
Mm-hmm.
Because even in the most partisan news operations, a lot of them, there's factions of people who want to report more accurately, which is perceived as being less profitable. But the idea is to encourage what's going on that's good, and usually using quiet back channels and quiet diplomacy to do that. And then when something goes wrong, to have news professionals point that out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm beginning to see a fair amount of that. There are really good examples of that, like Emily Bell, Brian Stelter, folks like that, standing up at risk to their careers and being pretty brave about it.
If you were to go home tonight and wanted to read an objective account about what happened today in the news, where would you turn?
I have a whole collection of news feeds
mm-hmm.
from different places, and then I read some newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
I read Washington Post, New York Times. There's always a grain of salt involved, particularly if it's my industry they're reporting on, that is technology, since I know something. And I read a lot of news feeds. Maybe my favorite in politics is Political Wire by Tegan Goddard,
mm-hmm.
since what he does, he has a good sense of what's real or not, and he will excerpt reports from trustworthy news reports. And that way, through the day, you can get a good look at what's going on in a fairly painless way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Before we get to your gift to City University of New York, who are some of the other organizations in this journalistic arena that you have supported?
Well, I'll probably forget some as I go geographically. I'm supporting the work of First Draft, which is
Shorenstein Center,
yeah. mm-hmm. which is part of, I think it's now part of Harvard Kennedy School.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're doing a lot of work, like with their Information Disorder Lab, reporting on disinformation attacks, trying to do something about them. At the Columbia University Journalism School, on the one hand, there's Columbia Journalism Review, and I've helped recently by helping get going a disinformation beat. The primary there is Matthew Ingram.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, there's the Tau Center, Emily Bell and Jonathan Albright. One of their great focus areas is how disinformation warfare is being waged by foreign state actors and their allies here in the U.S. At CUNY, there's a bunch of efforts going on, the News Integrity Initiative, which is part of the whole CUNY thing, but also there's a group in Manhattan called Data and Society,
mm-hmm.
led by Dana Boyd.
Right.
And they're doing really good focused efforts figuring out what are the networks of disinformation and harassment, and how do you do something about that? And just one more, there's the Alliance for Securing Democracy, which is being done out of Washington, focusing, again, a lot on foreign state actors' warfare, because the foreign state actors have declared war on the U.S., focusing on the electoral process and other areas.
And let me throw in one more, ProPublica.
ProPublica is a great example of how honest, trustworthy journalism is happening.
Mm-hmm. So what inspired such a transformative gift? It was $20 million to the City University of New York School of Journalism. And how did you decide upon them to be the recipient of that gift?
Well, I had worked with the CUNY Journalism School for some years, particularly Jeff Jarvis, then Sarah Bartlett.
Mm-hmm.
And I had seen that they were doing good journalism themselves, talking about business models, ethics, that kind of thing. I saw that they were training a lot of regular people, people who might not have much opportunity to get a quality journalism education otherwise. When I went to school about 40 years ago, I couldn't have done it without someone lending a helping hand. So I figure if I'm going to be about fairness, opportunity, and respect, I should practice what I preach. I should put my money where my mouth is, and that means supporting in a big way the school that does the that does a great deal in that regards in New York, which is kind of ground zero for most of the news operations in this country and beyond.
And you'd like to hear a diversity of voices, and you're going to get that at City University of New York, unlike some of the other schools you might have chosen.
Yeah, when you're giving a break to people who could use a hand, everyone gets to play.
Let me ask you a silly question, okay? Maybe the silliest you've ever heard. How much do you think facts make a difference in changing someone's mind?
The answer, given that this is a research area, seems to be that if you find the right way to approach people, facts do matter. If there's a person who's invested a great deal in something delusional, then it'll be really hard, really expensive to convince someone like that. But everyone is capable of redemption, and people have reasons for wanting to invest in something which may not be in their interest. There are people who will vote for people who actually will affect, let's say, trade practices, who directly hurt, which hurt those folks. And maybe the only thing will happen, maybe the only thing that will convince them that there's a problem is when they lose their jobs.
Well, more and more people today are receiving their news from big internet companies, Facebook and Google and Twitter. What do you think that impact has been? What worries you about that? And what do you think that these companies are doing right?
Well, a lot of the stuff that's going on right is being done through quiet back channels, diplomacy. Because when you criticize any kind of organization publicly, people resent that, even if the criticism is entirely correct. So what's happening is that in all the big dot-coms are now processes starting or well underway where people are wondering how they can do things better. For example, people are wondering if they're hosting, let's say, a platform which gets things right sometimes and gets things wrong sometimes, you know, how do they deal with that? Maybe what they got to do is when pieces come in which have been fact-checked and shown to be wrong, maybe those should be downranked. That's one approach. If an organization, though, is primarily a disinformation operation, maybe there's a moral responsibility not to host that kind of thing. There's a whole range of alternatives. Users should be able to choose the range of things they see. But I do think a platform shouldn't give material support to a known disinformation operation, particularly if it's being run or influenced by foreign state actors, bad actors, who are attacking the country.
Well, as a technology founder, you bring, I think, a special empathy to understand what some of these organizations, these big companies are going through. And they're probably trying to get a lot of it right, but many people are getting pretty frustrated at the pace of them getting it right.
Well, sometimes it's hard to admit you have a problem. And when you admit you have a problem, sometimes you don't ask for help and you don't get the fixes right. Meanwhile, people of good and bad intent are harshly criticizing you. It's kind of hard to make progress under those circumstances, but the big dot-coms are making progress.
You seem to be an optimist. Would that be fair?
I'm very much an optimist because I see how when things are done well, progress can be made.
Couple closing questions, and I know this probably has no impact on you personally, but do you suspect people would perceive you a little bit differently today if you, in fact, had named that website San Francisco Events or some other generic name and not Craigslist?
Well, with my name on the thing, that gives me a big moral responsibility to get it right, to keep it right. If it was San Francisco Events or something else, maybe I would have felt more comfortable selling at some point years ago. I could have done so with a clear conscience. And today I'd be, you know, still living pretty comfortably.
You'd be fine.
But right now, I can legitimately feel that I've helped other people make the world better. That ain't bad.
No, not at all. Finally, Craig, as Warren Buffett has said, it's much more difficult to give money away than it was to make it in the first place. You've been at this for a number of years, since 2011 and more recently with Craig Newmark Philanthropies in 2016. What lessons have you learned about giving money away effectively and achieving optimal impact?
Well, I cheat a bit. I tend to find organizations which are already good and having impact, and those are often the ones...
Kind of cheating to me.
Yeah, well, those are the ones that I'll tend to support. I am not good at evaluating, let's say, a startup nonprofit, which may have a lot of potential, but I just don't know. And then I provide help, often in the forms of influence, often cash, and then relentless nagging about doing a better job with communications and PR.
You are a nudger.
That's true.
Well, Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist, and Craig Newmark Philanthropies, thanks so much for being here this evening. If people want to learn more about what you're doing and the causes you're supporting, your website would be?
It's craignewmarkphilanthropies.org.
Fantastic. Thanks, Craig. It was a real pleasure to have you on the show.
It's my pleasure.
I'll be back with more of The Business of Giving right after this.
The Business of Giving can be heard every Sunday evening between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern on AM 970 The Answer in New York and on iHeartRadio. You can follow us at Biz of Give on Twitter and at Facebook.com/Business of Giving.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.